Get snacking and get cracking with a snack that packs a protein punch. Pistachios are known for their protein power, fiber, and better-for-you unsaturated fats for a combination that may help you keep feeling fuller longer. Wonderful Pistachios is a good source of protein with zero guilt. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. I love that they come in a variety of sizes and flavors, making this the perfect protein snack for any on-the-go adventure. Check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
We are back with Love Track Podcast. I'm Kevin Selly in a booth in Austin, Texas. Joined on the road, Gordon Mack in a supply closet. Where are you? You're very close to the camera. What's going on? Oh, it's a hotel room.
I'm in a hotel room. I'm in a hotel room in Flagstaff. And I have, I think, worse internet than you, but I have better audio now than you. And you're in a soundproof booth, and my internet and audio is better because something's janked up about your computer, man. What's going on?
Yeah, listen, we've been doing this remote thing for about a year. My USB ports have given up. They said it's time to go. Nothing works in the correct order. Like, one computer's internet is good, but the USB ports don't work. The other one, the USB ports work, but the internet is bad. This is the first time I think I've done a podcast ever with no headphones on. I feel really strange. I feel really free. I feel loose. I might say go in a different direction than anybody is ready for, just because it feels like you and I are talking. The audio, I apologize. So as you're listening, might be a little bit worse, but hey, we'll figure it out. We'll get rolling. Before we go and talk about the results of the weekend, how's your trip been? I know it's been a while since you've been in Flagstaff, about 3 or 4 days. So how has it been?
Yeah, trip's been pretty wild. So we were here filming a thing with the Under Armour Dark Sky team, but naturally, when you're in Flag, they're not the only ones here. Basically, the entire running mecca is here. And we went to Sedona, which, for those who don't know, it's like 2,000 feet lower elevation from Flagstaff that a lot of athletes go to do harder workouts. And we went there twice. But notably, on Friday afternoon, we went there to film a workout with the Dark Sky women. But when we show up, there's like literally 50-plus elite athletes all on the track doing a different workout. There's Molly Seidel was there. Molly Huddle was there. Charlie Grice, Erica Villa, the Dark Sky team, Ellie Pure, all the New Balance women were there. Like, you name it, they were there. And they were all doing different workouts. And it was cool because everyone is doing their own workout, but they would, like, hop into each other's workouts if they knew they were doing a similar pace. So, like, Rachel Schneider, she did a workout solo, but she ran in four different other groups' workouts throughout the entire session because she's like, hey, you're doing 70s? Okay, I would hop in there. Oh, you're doing something faster? Oh, you can take me through 400? Cool. And everyone was kind of like working off each other. They all were like cheering each other on. It was a really interesting environment, like super positive. So it was cool. So we did that and then got a couple workout Wednesdays. And then we did some interviews on Saturday. And then Sunday went to the long run, which is a very popular thing in Flagstaff, where Stephen Haas, who's like the orbiter of, I don't know if that's the right word, the orator of Flagstaff running. He says where the long run's going to be, and then everyone shows up. And so we went to film the long run. And, we got a guest coming in. We got my girlfriend JoJo coming back with some coffee. Excuse her. But the long run was cool. Harvard was there, the Harvard track team.
Oh, wow.
So I guess they realized, hey, our season isn't happening, so let's just go train in Flag for the spring. Overall, being in Flag is just fun. You're surrounded by running. You're surrounded by, you know, great downtown environment. And then I'm staying here all week because I'm going to go hiking in Grand Canyon, Sedona. It's going to be a good time. But enough about
how
that.
Many
anyway, cool content for me to put up on the internet for you guys to watch later on this month. So
I just have one question. That track scene that you painted sounds awesome, and I feel like someone needs to do a video of that. Just the teamwork and the camaraderie of it all. It's like jazz music, basically, right? You're improvising. Yeah. Like you're in, you're out, you're in, you're out. It's pretty cool. How many times was the word track yelled, though, at all? Did you hear anybody?
Not really that much, to be honest.
Because they know what they're doing, right?
But they all know. They have like this sixth sense to know when the track is hot. And the people just knew to stay out of lane one and two at all times. But you would just constantly see people, you know. It's not, I think it's more controlled in a weird way because it's not like anyone's ever going to be doing, there's not like a sprint group there or like someone doing like a crazy like hurdle drill or anything like that. Everyone's basically in lane one. So you kind of know that's just like the freeway, and then you get on the on ramp at the start line, and then you get off and get back on. So it's kind of like a moving freeway, lane one at Sedona.
Another content idea. We come back this time next year. We dress you up. We disguise you. We put you in lane one jogging 10-30 miles and mic you up and just hear what people say to you.
That'll be fun. Yeah. And I just like have headphones on, like big headphones. So I like have ankle weights and everything and just like God, oh, that'll be fun. Trolling a track workout team. That'll be fun.
And then and then you reveal yourself later and they're like, oh, great. Thanks, Gordon. Really appreciate you ruining the workout. We hate you even more now. We got great reviews with Lincoln on the pod last week. Like the chat was blowing up. Lincoln's back. Lincoln's back. No one was saying, oh, I'm glad he's here and Gordon's gone. But it was just, it was nice to hear that Lincoln is back. I don't know if you saw the video. He hasn't cut his hair in months. I think he's fallen on hard times a little bit. Just kidding. He's doing great. Also wanted to plug before we started the other show we got going on the Run. With Serenity Douglas. She got two episodes up. First one was with Kenny Harrison. The second one was with Marquise Dendy. If you haven't checked it out, you should do that right now or right after this episode. Also, if you want to comment in the chat while we're watching, we already got one positive comment from the Saxy Life. Let's go. The Mac is back. So here we go. If you got comments in the chat, leave them right now. I want to start first, Gordon. I want to start first with a meet that we had on Flow Track and the emergence of a new American steeple star. That's right, I said it. A steeple star, Courtney Waymond of BYU, her first steeple since 2017. What does she do, Gordon? What does she do? She runs 9:31.37, puts her fourth on the NCAA list behind who? Well, Courtney Frericks, Jenny Simpson, Emma Coburn, and Colleen Quigley, the big four of American women's steepling. She's already there. In just her first race again since 2017. She had good competition in this race, theoretically, with Hannah Steelman, who is an All-American herself, very credentialed runner. And Waymit just ran away with this thing. I think we are going to see Waymit break the collegiate record this year, Gordon, when she gets another chance to run it. I think she's going to kind of bridge that gap that we're going to see once the Coburn, Frericks, Quigley era, when it ends eventually, which is not going to be anytime soon. But Waymit right there with Allie Ostrander already in terms of PBs. And what you get from Waymit, Gordon, is you get somebody who's good on the flat already, right? Like we talked about her being a 5,000 meter favorite. So if you take the fastest woman or one of the fastest women already in the flat five, or when you go back to the indoor season, the NCAA champion in the flat three, and then you put her in the steeple, this is the result that you get. So Waymit, big favorite. Steeple on the women's side this year is sneaky good in the NCAA. We talked about Camelli running 9:37 this year, but Waymit is the top of the list. I think she's going to be a factor when it comes time for the trials as well, too.
You put a lot of trust in a 9:31 steepler to like not only improve debut by another eight seconds, and then be already in the conversation with the Quigleys and Coburns and Frericks of this world.
Well,
have a good indoor season, but like she didn't like run like 9:20.
I'm not saying she's going to beat them in the trials. I said she's going to factor in the trials. Okay. I think obviously top five is a possibility. You think top five is out of the question for the trials?
Oh yeah, I mean anyone can get fourth. It's top three are the known, and then anyone could be fourth in that race. So, and if you run 9:31, you can be fourth. But I mean, she didn't get the, one thing that, that not to, she didn't get the standard out of it. So we do know she has to run another fast race to try to get the Olympic standard, and maybe she will, you know, push it at NCAAs, or maybe she'll try to run NCAA prelims really quick. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Courtney Wayman, what was her PB before this race?
10-0 something. Doesn't matter. 10-0. Start with a 10.
That's wild to go that long without steepling and go from – then all of a sudden – like, how do you even remember how to steeple if you don't go for that long? Like, was she still, like, practicing steepling, or was she, like, taking, like, a whole four-year sabbatical off of even going over barriers? Do you know?
I don't think she had been going over many barriers until this past – season. And that's why I think the collegiate record is going to go down this year, just because the rep of doing the race the second time is going to help immensely. Because it's not like your steeplers aren't doing like mock steeples in practice in the same way that 5,000 runners aren't doing mock 5,000s all out in practice. But steeple, there's the added technical element, there's the added time over the barriers. So if you put her in a race with Camelli and have another race under her belt, I think you're just going to see a huge bump up. Because if the last time you ran it was 4 years ago and you're running 10, you're a completely different runner now. So your experience running it is not really perfectly transferable to where you're at right now, which is why I'm so optimistic on what she's going to do the rest of the season.
We should mention that this race almost didn't even happen. The men's and women's steeple at the West Coast Relays almost got canceled. For those who are watching it, they might have been confused what was happening in the middle, right before the good races started. But there was a rolling blackout that hit Clovis, California, where the entire stadium was shut, turned off, basically no power, no internet, no nothing, completely dark. So we lost the stream for a little bit. Luckily, we were able to – they postponed the meet by like an hour or so. And then they decided to like, all right, we figured it out. We're going to do a track meet in the dark. And we recorded it to tape. And you can see we had athletes line the track with cell phones. So they had a little light rail. What I want to know is, did they send each other text messages to each cell phone to get their own virtual light pacer around the track where it lit up? Because it said, hey, we need to give them 3:36 pace in the 1500. So it's send a text every 1 second to get across around the track. That would have been amazing, but they didn't do that.
Well, they were incredibly resourceful to get this thing up and going, and they prioritized those 1500s, obviously, because they couldn't steeple in the dark. That sounds like a horrible idea for anybody involved. Even your worst enemy, you don't want them steepling in the dark. And they made do with it. I mean, this was incredible. I mean, it's great. Towards the end, they got them back working, right? So we got it for the steeples. We got it for those elite 5Ks, where I know you're excited to see the close of that men's race, because you kind of nailed this one. I don't know. We don't have the tape handy yet. We're not up to that level of production. But I believe you said Grijalva is going to go out at 13:40 pace and then kick down with like a 55 close to 13:30. Or maybe you said 13:30 pace and then kick down to 13:20. But basically, the elements were there for what you said, because his close was ridiculous here. And I know it was off of a relatively conservative pace, but 54 on that close just blew everybody out of the water with a 13:29. What are the updated – we need the updated Gordon 5000 rankings now.
Well, before I give you – let's fast forward on this video to about the – 600 meters to go mark for Grijalva. So
really testing the limits of Travis's production.
So here he goes. All right, let's just watch this. For those listening to the pod, just go on the website and link up the audio to this video. But, all right, 600 to go. He takes the lead. And just look how quickly the lead gets expanded over Dressel. So, all right, it's a little more. So you just started. Now it's already like 5 meters. But then on the back, eventually on the back stretch of his last 400, when he closes in 55, look at this. He is already 15 meters now after the first 100 meters. Now it's probably 20 meters. And he went out 600 to go. It is completely over after the 200 with the lap to go already. And then look at that. Look at that. Yeah, it's like
he ran him out of the screen. He ran him out of the screen from 600 to go to 400 to go would be the best way to describe it if you're not able to watch this video. And then by the backstretch, then with 300 to go, he's up 30, 40 meters at that point, and this thing is all she wrote. Now, who is this the strategy to beat? Because he has to like his kick more than Kiptu. He's got to like his kick more than Kurgat, so it doesn't make sense for him to be the aggressor. Is this the strategy to beat one of the Oregon guys if they're in this race? Is this the strategy to beat somebody else?
He knows he can beat Tier because he's already outkicked Tier in a fast race when he ran 13:16. So the really only unknown wild card is if Hawker does the 5K, can he outkick a Hawker, right? Because Hawker right now is showing that no one can beat him. I'm thinking, though, my sources are telling me that I think Hawker might just do the 15, which then makes it even easier for Grijalva to win this 5K. Against a Tier who's
even
already
easier. You said even easier with the men's 5K this year. Come on, man. Nothing's easy.
Amen. But like we all like are, I think low key, everyone is just forgetting that I think Luis Grijalva is the best 5K runner in the nation and Jared Nagus is the best 1500 meter runner in the nation. But we just don't know that because neither of them ran indoors. Neither of them have done a heavy loaded outdoor season. And so therefore they're kind of just like, hey, guys, don't forget, we're pretty good too. I know the stars of Oregon and Iowa State are doing their thing up front, but when it all comes down to it, I think Notre Dame and Northern Arizona are going to show up pretty well. But we'll have to wait and see. Yard and Goose was supposed to be in this 1500 at the West Coast Relays, but they scratched out. Jared hasn't run anything since his 5K in March, so maybe he's a little banged up. I don't know. But – the 5K, once again, they're now, I looked it up, 17 men have broken 13:30 in the 5K in 2021. Only two men did it in 2019. It was, it's just insane. Yeah, like the men's 5K is just wild. I'm in love with it, you know? as you can see on the screen, I'm in love with the 5K. This is wild.
Yeah. NAU wise, I think they had a good meet. You saw Abdiahmed Nur put down a good 10K in the morning when lights were not necessary at all. Blaise Farrow ran well in that race too. So they got all their people through. Going back to that women's five, Ellie Hennis, man, she laid down the lumber there. I don't know how else to put it. Just like she was right on the rabbit's shoulder. She was almost inching out to lane two for a lot of this, and you were kind of wondering, man, she must just feel really good because she's basically getting on the rabbit to go even quicker. And then with 2K to go, it was just her. The rabbit steps off and she doesn't slow. Like she just keeps grinding and grinding and grinding. She ends up running 15:18, a big PB for her, puts her second in the nation right now. You know, we don't know where a lot of these women are going to race. You talked about that last week. We don't know who's doing steeple, who's doing five, who's doing 15. It's all over the place. But you look at a race like that from Hennis and the confidence that she showed there, you have to like her chances with only a month to go or 6 weeks to go in the season.
Yeah. She's kind of been a very consistent runner her entire 4 to 5 year career at NC State. And I think this is kind of the first time she's thrown down a mark that's like separating herself from the field. She's always been like in that group of, I'm a top eight runner. But now this is like, hey, I can 15:18. You don't see Whitney Orton doing that. You don't see, Mercy Chilangot did do that. She ran about 15:16, 17. So she basically ran the same time as the cross country champ. So she's definitely in the conversation.
Well, we look at the results from this race. I mean, it was fast, not just – I mean, Hennis won going away, but it wasn't because people didn't bring their A game. You know, Donahue with a 15:29, Prowse with a 15:29, Turner with 15:36. Those are fast times in the same way we talk about the men's times just going up another level this year. So good runs there, but Hennis by far the class of the field. second best in the NCAA this year. Okay, I want to talk about those 1500s that took place when the lights were out, those premier 1500 meter races, because we got to see Gordon those races. Who was born in the dark and who merely was adopted by the dark? They were the Bain 1500s there. Which one do we got one coming up here, queued up here. Let's just roll whichever one that is, and we can talk about it. What were your takeaways from, I guess this is first the women's 1500?
Yeah, I mean, there's just so much depth now in the women's 1500. I heard a stat the other day. I think 20 plus women have broken 420 in the 1500 this year, where in 2019 it was only like four or five. Like everyone is running quicker. We saw a good race here between Whitney Orton and the rest of the field.
Chrissy Gear gets the win.
I'm sorry, I'm losing track of the names. But who's exactly was the
Chrissy Gear and 409?
I should know this.
Gear.
Your audio is cutting out, Kev. So maybe we should
Chrissy
take down
Gear.
Gear. Yeah, my bad. Gear, who is a steepler, another person who's
is she still? She
could maybe, I think so. But like, if you're 409 speed, maybe that is the solution to win the steeple. But yeah, Gear 409 flat, and then Orton right behind her 409.31. Yeah. Can't, I mean, BYU had what, four women break 415.
Yeah.
And then Caitlin Toohey, the freshman, 414. Everyone was talking about that. Good PB. I guess it's the PB for her.
Season.
But it just shows the depth that someone like Toohey can finish ninth in this race, run 414, and there can be eight other women who are all running quicker and led by Chrissy Gear, 409 flat.
Well, she was – Toohey was there with three and four to go. Like, she was right on Orton's – shoulder. She was not shy at all. She fell back, but again, another NC State runner showing confidence in the early moments of the race, and that's a good sign for her. But yeah, Orton, I think, doesn't really want to be in the position of, I mean, no miler wants to be in the position of leading, so I wouldn't read too much into this. I mean, great run for Gear, especially considering we know her more as a steepler. But yeah, I thought going into the weekend, I said this on, it was a Wednesday, we'd be talking about Herta and Orton as the 1500 meter co-favorites. Well, Herta didn't run in this meet, correct? And Orton got beat. So that prediction for me was a bit off. I think you have more confusion than anything in the 1500 than you did like going into the weekend, because now look at the glut of people there at the top, because BYU could put Orton in the five right now and then put Camp in the 15, and with the way Anna Camp closes,
right. I think something's happening. I think I lost all that. Elon, did people hear that normally, or was that just me going crazy?
Yeah, that's on your end, Gordon.
Okay,
it was a great point.
I'm not gonna lie, I heard just a robotic talk the entire time. I think it's because I tried to load Tiefers, and then my internet can't handle the Tiefers top 500 list, and then we lose I lose connection with you. But whatever you said, I'm sure it's great. I'm sure the audience appreciated that take, that high level take that you gave. What I wanted to talk about was the men's race. One, yeah. Sam Prekel, he runs 3:36 every time he goes. He's just really good at running 3:36. We talked about once again. Every time an elite male U.S. 1500 meter runner doesn't run 3:35, another Angles and Central get their wings. Because once again, we don't see it. Now, there are still more big opportunities for 1500s. You have one at Mount SAC this weekend. There'll probably be another one at Sound Running. Maybe an NCAA final goes fast. I don't know. But right now it's looking good for the three people with the Olympic standard in the 1500. But I think the big takeaway I thought from this race was BYU. Connor Mance, a 10K runner, are in 3:37. If you look at the Tiefers, like top 10, they have like five guys in the 1500. It's just wild. Talen Franco. They have Lucas Bonds. Casey Klinger ran like a fast converted mile that converts to a fast 1500. And then Casey Klinger, I mean, Connor Mansell obviously isn't going to run the 15, but maybe he does. Maybe he's like, hey, let's stay fresh for the 10K at the trials and let's run the 1500.
He didn't like all those comments. He didn't like all those comments about us saying he needs to start his kick on Thursday if he's going to be competitive in the 1500 on Friday. And he stuck his nose right in there. This is him. Impressive. On the other side of the coin, Washington. What do you make of Washington's performance here in the 1500? Sam Tanner, who was a star indoors, runs a 3:34, was here, you know, in the mix with 100 to go, and just went. We got the results up here. You know, just went backwards over the latter portion of that race, and it's just you would obviously Franco and Bonds. You're not surprised that they did well for BYU, but it's almost like the Washington and BYU results are flipped here, Gordon. After that.
Yeah, and I was talking to someone here at Flag about Sam Tanner's performance, and they kind of reminded me, like, Sam just got announced to the Olympic team a few weeks ago. And I think once that happened, your focus shifts and you realize, okay, I need to be at my best in August now, not in June. And maybe I need to start kind of resetting my season and maybe – running a 3:35 1500 in May isn't the best thing for me or getting prepared to do that. So maybe his training kind of took a step back and going back into base phase to kind of build up to August, which could be a reason why someone like Sam Tanner can run 3:38 and not really be in his sharpest like 3:35 shape.
Mm-hmm.
So
makes some sense. Makes some sense, but it's just, I don't know, still like a surprise because after he ran that time at the New Balance meet indoors, he thought, okay, this is going to be the guy or one of the guys, him and Nagus, or then when Hawker put his name out there, those three. Interesting to see how it develops. But the men's 15 is super deep. We got the top 15 list here. Travis can pull up Tiefers without pulling the show to a complete halt, so we'll have him do that. Let you look at the screen here. But yeah, Ilya Kipsang up front, Waleed Suleiman, Mario Garcia Romo. Then the BYU contingent starts rolling in there pretty deep. Obviously, there's going to be some scratches here, but the common theme is just fast all around this year.
Where's Cole Hawker? Cole Hawker is now 20th.
Yeah, it is funny, right?
20th.
He looks so good in that 15, but he just hasn't done one since, and he's the 1500-meter favorite, and now he's 20th.
Yeah, it's wild. That's why PBs, predicting the results based off of just who has the fastest PB is never a good option when it comes to distance races. Unless you're Ilya Kipchoge, then it's a good way to predict.
He's got – well, everybody's got basically two weekends left. And he's got Twilight, Oregon Twilight, and then the conference meet. And that's pretty much it. And some people who don't have conference might run that sound running meet in California. But that's pretty much it in terms of trying to run fast. And since if you're looking towards the trials too, that's basically the amount of times you have to run quick between now and the Olympic trials, unless you get a quick one at the NCAA meet. Which it might be fast, but if you're trying to run 13:15 in the 5K to get the Olympic standard at the NCAA final, that might be a little bit too much to ask. So these next 2 weeks, you're really going to want to pay attention to.
Yeah, got to pay attention. I will be hiking during the Mount Sac meet, so I won't really know much. I'll be updating my phone with bad cell service. See what's happening around track, man. What else happened this weekend? Anything happened on the sprint side?
Well, on the NCAA, yeah, I want to talk about Bromell here. And obviously want to talk about the teenagers for the United States running ridiculous times. But while we're on the topic of the NCAA, Micah Williams ran really fast for Oregon, 10-0. And then North Carolina A&T's 400. Trevor Stewart dropped a good one, 44:52. Randolph Ross has also gone 44:69 and Elijah Young 45:98 there. Some depth for A&T, and Stewart is looking pretty good too.
North Carolina A&T's conference, the MEAC, is going to be live on FloTrack in 2 weeks. So check that out. That should be good. You see his footage of Stewart running 44.5. I mean, it's no Noah Williams 44.3, am I right? Because
There we go. Finally giving him his due. Took two months and getting called out on Twitter for Gordon to admit that he was wrong. Yeah, I think it's going to be a good race. You have, obviously, Williams, Deadman, Ross, Trevor Stewart, Blockberger from Arizona. The men's 400 is getting excited. We got a late rush there by Randolph Ross over the last 15 meters. Good close there by him. But let's talk Bromell. You want to talk Bromell? I'm ready to make a statement about Trayvon Bromell. It's almost like an election night call. You know, the panel's talking, and all of a sudden Wolf Blitzer puts his hand right here, and he says, I'm willing to say after this 988 that Trayvon Bromell has now moved into 100-meter favorite for the Olympics. That's right. I am confirming this. Trayvon Bromell, officially, we had him as co-favorite. I'm now officially moving him to title of favorite after his 988 run in Jacksonville.
Well, I think your broadcast is a few weeks on delay because he's been the favorite in my books for before 2021 even started. He became the favorite as soon as he ran back in 2020 summer. There was no reason. Noah Lyles hasn't done anything to show that he can compete with Bromell. I know Lyles is a slower starter in the season and he kind of works his way into it, but Lyles is not Christian Coleman. And with no Christian Coleman, Bromell clearly is the favorite. And Justin Gatlin, he's going to be there. He's going to have the participation trophy of being able to qualify once again, but Bromell is going to be the one that's going to win it, provided he shows up, gets the job done, and is healthy.
You were right to be early on it. I just was giving Lyles a little bit more time to come around. But look, this is Bromell over the last 2 years. He's beaten DeGrasse twice. This is the 100. Beaten DeGrasse twice, beaten Lyles twice, beaten Gatlin once. Now in the 60, he lost to Ronnie Baker. I'm not really worried right now about 60s. There's no 60 at the Olympics. Last I checked, maybe they'll try to shorten everything. Try to get everybody out of there quicker. Yeah, exactly. Every event gets reduced by 60%, right? So the 5K gets dropped down. Yeah, the 10K is now the 6K. It's very confusing to everybody. That's not happening. Look, another just amazing start from Bromell. That is now the rule. It doesn't seem to be the exception. The big question is just the health. And every time we get closer, every day we get closer to the trials, that's one day of him being healthier and healthier and healthier and proving once again that he is solid sub 9.9. Listen, times, whatever, especially in Florida, I feel like everybody runs fast in Florida all the time. You could go down there, Gordon, you could probably break 14 down in Florida. That's how quick those tracks in Florida are. But the important thing when I look at here is the margin of victory, right? And just how well he performed at going out of the blocks. I mean, you see it there if you're watching right now, or you can find that tweet from Bromell over this weekend. Pretty easy to find. Over. Yeah, it's over. Yeah.
It's over after the first 20 meters.
Yeah. It was pretty crazy. Actually, what's great, can we play audio from tweets? Because there's low key like a really funny thing that the cameraman mumbles during this thing in the beginning. I don't know if we can play audio from tweets while we play it, but no, we can't. All right, next. I think he just says like, damn, like 1 second into the race. He's just like, damn. Because it's over. You're right, 100%. And that's what he did last race, right, against a deeper field. And that's what he did here too. So, Bromell, favorite.
So, Bromell is the now, but we're starting to see the 2024 class, but the people who are going to be fast in 2024 Olympics, probably 2028 Olympics.
Yeah, yeah.
Two high school juniors running out of their mind. Was it also at this meet?
In Jacksonville?
Where these high school kids ran?
I think so. Let's see.
Arion Knight and Jalen Slade They weren't. They was at a different Florida meet.
Is it Claremont?
Claremont. Both 17 years old. Knighton runs 9.99, 10.07, and Slade runs 10.03, 10.03. It's just wild. I mean, the 9.99 was plus 2.7 wind, so not wind legal, but comparatively, when Bromell broke 10 in high school, it was like 4 wind. When Bowling broke 10 in high school, it was like 4.0 wind. This is only 2.7 wind. That's not that much more. He clearly is running like what the professionals are running, and this is showing me he can make a U.S. final and potentially finish top six and then be on that Olympic 4x1.
The 10.0 in the final was just a 2.1 wind.
Yeah.
This, with both of these guys, I think it's a really good sign for the 200, because I think that's where the spot is available this year, because that's the way that event works out. And, you know, Slade obviously has run fast 200s. That 2020 was wind legal, number 4 in U.S. history. Knighton, we've seen run a really good 200. I think there's going to be more opportunity, even though it's going to be slim, is going to be in the 200. What I think is interesting here, Gordon, as we have more runners go pro in high school, like is the case with Knighton, and just in general, train more professionally, train more with a few meets in mind as opposed to high school meets, you know, schedule like a pro. I wonder if that means that the adjustment to going to something like the trials is going to be not as dramatic, because they're not trying to put a round peg in a square hole of a season. He's probably training with the idea of my peak is the Olympic trials. Whereas really good high schoolers before, maybe they were looking at the state meet or those all-star meets post state meet, right? The New Balances, the Brookses, the whatever of the world, Adidas's of the world, or in cross country, the NXNs or the Foot Lockers. But now that that's shifted and a lot of these top runners are opting out of a traditional high school season, I wonder if we'll see not as big of a, you know, speed bump on their way to these big time meets. Now, I say that with the knowledge that in 2016, when Lyles and Norman were high school seniors, they ran about as well as you could have hoped in the Olympic trials, and they had run high school seasons themselves. But this just becomes more and more of a trend. And if they're treating themselves like pros, it would make sense that they would look at the Olympic trials as, this is when I have to get ready, not, hey, this is a nice little bonus at the end of the season. It's like, no, this is the focus of the season.
Do you know when are there USA juniors this year? Oh, it's canceled.
I don't know.
They canceled it. Because does that mean, how are they picking? Because isn't there World Juniors this year? Sorry, I just found this out now. This is probably old news. Oh, so it looks like, okay. Never mind. I didn't mean to do it. So with no USA Juniors, that's going to be another like thing that these guys can kind of back up plan. So if the Olympic trials don't go as planned, they still have that opportunity to get some international experience later on in the summer as well. So it's like kind of there's that double dip where they can train for the trials, and if that doesn't work, they have that fallback where like they can still go back into the high school junior mode and, you know, get their feet wet with competing against people of their age as opposed to people 5-10 years older than them.
Yeah, but I don't know, their feet are pretty wet at this point. Like all these races that they're running in, these Florida type meets are filled with pros, right?
There's a difference, though, I feel.
The difference, but I think what's going to happen,
there's no expectations, there's no pressure, there's no hype around it. Like, people don't even know this meet is happening until after the fact, for the most part. They're like, oh, this meet happened in Florida, and they ran fast. There's such a different mentality when all of a sudden you realize, oh, this is it. This is the race. This is the one that matters. And you're you're just not as loose, I feel like. And so, yes, they're getting experience of racing against people that they will race against, but they have yet to get the experience of the pressure.
Well, the pressure, I think, will come at the trials, not just in the, like, with every round, it's going to come, right? There's going to be pressure in the hunt, in the first round of the 100, the first round of the 200. It's not just something where they are only going to feel it if they get to the final. And then I think someone like Knighton is going to get invited to Diamond Leagues, especially, you know, he's sponsored, right? Especially if he makes a final of the U.S. trials, like, he's going to get invites to go compete overseas. I get your point that that's not a championship race, so the pressure is off, but he'll get to compete consistently against guys low 20s into the 19s. Got a comment in the chat here about the 100 might be more open than the 200 after the top spot. I just don't see that, just because weird stuff always happens at the trials and at championships. People get hurt, people randomly scratch out. Like, it always seems like, I know right now Lyles is solid, but Bednarik's looked really good. You got Terrence Laird in there tearing it up. There'll probably be somebody else there as well. But the 200 just seems to find a way every big meet to have something go haywire in it, to where that there's a open spot, or a little bit, not even like saying they're going to get top three, but a better chance to get into the final, make it higher. Make it to a higher place, because in the 100 you got to think, I mean, it's great, you know, sub 10 is nothing to sneeze at, but you got to think, we talked about Bromell, we talked about Lyles, we talked about Gatlin, we talked about Baker, and then you have that all other crew there, right? Like Kyrie King's run sub 10 this year, Cravon Gillespie, Isaiah Young, except, you know, Michael Williams is now running 10-0s, you know, like, they're going to be sharp and ready to go. So the margin between making the final and, you know, not getting out of those semis is pretty small in both races, but I think it's even smaller in the 100.
What are your thoughts on world relays or lack of world relays?
They probably should not have had them, would be my takeaway. I mean, shout out to Kenya, gets the bronze. They got third out of three teams in the mixed gender shuttle hurdle relay, which is a favorite relay of mine. But no, this meet was like a blip on the radar. And the thing was, is it had the weekend all to itself a bit. I mean, yeah, we were focused on the West Coast relays from a collegiate perspective, but globally, obviously you had Bromell running these fast times and these quick meets in Florida, but like, they didn't put a continental tour on this weekend. They didn't put a Diamond League meet on this weekend. So they have the opportunity to do it, but when the U.S. doesn't run, when Jamaica doesn't run, when Canada doesn't run, and then when they take out all the distance races, and then most of the good sprinters from the remaining countries opt out. I mean, we had Travis look this up before. The fastest 4x4 split was 45 seconds on the men's side of things. That's what you're going to get. That's what you're going to get when you don't have the best people compete. So it was a completely watered down event. I love the meet. I like the concept of the meet when it first rolled out, but this year did not work.
Do you think there's a concern that the World Relays could become like the Continental Cup?
Is that like the disaster scenario?
You know what I mean? Like, where it's like, oh yeah, it's that one meet that no one really gives a crap about being at their best for. You know,
I think a lot of,
I mean,
I think a lot of people ran the earlier iterations of it because it was in the Bahamas, right? It was not a lot for the U.S. at least, and the Caribbean. There's no travel, and then you had European countries and you had African countries come over too. But having people go to Poland, obviously, that's better for the European nations, but I think you got to figure out a time and a place where it's going to attract the highest amount of people, because honestly, like, I don't know, even if every team had like their B team or like A/B team, I could still kind of get into it because it's relays and relays are fun, right? Like, if the U.S. runs 50% of their best people, like, it's like Bromell runs and Ronnie Baker runs, and then two other guys who are 10-0 guys. Like, I'll still get into that. Like, I'll still watch it. It'll be fun to see. Oh, Bromell's got a deficit. Can he catch people? Oh, in the 4x4, like, Phil Francis is even with Jamaica in the last leg. Like, I'll still watch that. But when it gets to this point, I mean, when you have obviously prominent countries missing, and then half of the events are gimmick events, like, that's not any fun. Like, I think most people would much rather watch a 4x8, right, than some of the events that they ran. Just have some sort of distance representation.
Yeah, I think the reason they don't do distance is apparently a lot of countries don't have good distance athletes. So it's a lot easier for a country to find a respectable 400-meter runner who won't get lapped versus finding a miler who won't get lapped. So I think that's the issue.
But I think what you should try to do is put together 6 to 8 team compelling fields. So you don't need the whole world running your 4x8, but can you get 6 teams? Can you get 8 teams running a good 4x8? Yeah, you could do that. Is that the same team, though, that's going to be able to put together a 4x1 that's good? That's the problem. It's just the same problem as in high school track or in college track. Not everybody's deep. Not everybody has the 4x1 and the 4x1500, right? Like, so you got to kind of figure out how to entice people, how to entice a nation to bring an entire team, even though they're going to get stomped in one event probably, but they have a chance to get a medal in another event.
Kevin, did you see that one race on Sunday, yesterday? Happened Sunday night.
On Sunday night.
Yeah, it came down to like a close finish at the end. I think we have video of it. Travis, can you pull it up?
I think we do. Is this the it was a tip in involving the Sixers that went well for the first time?
I think we have video. Right?
Okay. So very funny.
What are your thoughts on this little
copyright violation? I'm reporting this to the NBA. Adam Silver, take down the channel.
What are your thoughts on that finish of Ben Simmons taking it to your San Antonio Spurs?
Well, it was Ben Simmons' second made field goal of the game. Really impressed that Ben Simmons got shut down by a Spurs defense that did not have 4 starters. Just real impressive, real way to beat your chest after a win there by the Philadelphia 76ers. Really showed their championship medal. Again, I was just surprised they were on the right side of a tip-in for once. So that was a good thing for them.
So here's the thing. Obviously, for people who don't challenge the podcast
down the stretch.
For people who don't know, you're a diehard Spurs fan. I'm a diehard Sixers fan. We would have potentially been at this game.
You went to Flagstaff.
I went to Flagstaff instead. But if I didn't, you and me would have been in the stadium together at this game.
We would have fought.
We would not have been good. That would have been a long ride home if we hope we didn't carpool on that situation. But, like, would you have been mad at
me? Here's my question.
Would you have taken it out on
me? Yeah, I'm 100% mad at you. Here's my question, though. Is that a word, like, so Spurs rest everybody. Would I have rather just have them get blown out by 30 than have that happen? Yeah, probably, because that was really annoying.
Yeah, but it was also annoying that the Sixers took the gas pedal off the gas, or foot off the gas pedal, and let you guys get back in the game. So
that's not what happened. Spurs just outplayed them because they're a better team top to bottom. But all right, anyway, okay, East is weak this year. Divine Odaduru, 1988, big run for him. Excited to see what Divine does this year. Obviously had a tough championship in Doha. This week coming up, Gordon, we got a lot of fun stuff this week coming up. You got that Continental Tour. You got that. We have 2 Continental Tours, right? There's one in Japan. And then also the one at Mount Sac. Are you hearing anything when you were out in Flagstaff? Are you hearing anything about Mount Sac? Because it seems like this is going to be the meet when we get some sort of, well, I guess the Eugene meet was solid, but we're going to get a lot more people showing up. Like, this is going to look even more like a Diamond League, I believe.
Yeah, I think it'll be similar to the Eugene meet, to be honest. I think the U.S. distance runners are basically kind of eyeing the Mount Sac meet and the Sound Running meet as the two kind of prep races until they get ready for the trials. So I don't think it's gonna be anything wild, but I mean, we'll see. We'll see when we start seeing the entries. But yeah, this weekend also, though, it's going to be a wild weekend for high school track, because the Florida and Texas state meets are this weekend, and they're both live on Flow. And obviously, you know, Texas sprinters and Florida sprinters are the best in the country. And so we could see some, I'm not sure if we'll see like a Matt Bowling type experience that we had in 2019, but there could be a low key runner from Texas or from Florida that shows up and has an incredible double or something like that.
We should also mention, people bring it up in the chat, and I did not see this in the Claremont, or I didn't see this in the results just because the Claremont stuff came across late. Elaine Thompson, 10.78 with a plus 1.8. So that's second in the world, obviously behind Sha'Carri's 10.72. So I'm excited. I don't know if you saw this, Gordon. You were traveling. Last week they announced that Gateshead Diamond League Women's 100 with Richardson, Thompson, Fraser Price, and Dina Asher-Smith. That's at the end of May. So you're getting four of the top five. I mean, maybe the top four in the world right now, squaring off in the women's 100 at the end of May.
That should be a good litmus test for Richardson, who has yet to really, I mean, she's running well now. I mean, she's consistent as hell, but again, I think there's something different about running in low key Florida meets versus like getting on a plane and going through the whole process of like, this is the big leagues, you know? I mean, she's already a big leaguer, but she has yet to run in big league competitions that often. I mean, Prefontaine's really the only big league, I guess, in USA's. Prefontaine in USA's from 2019 to the last big league meet she's been in. So she needs to get her – I think it's smart for her. She should, like, do – if I were her, she should do, like, multiple diamond leagues to kind of be, like, normalize that world, that, you know, level process. So that when she goes to the Olympics, she's not, like, fish – like kind of like in over our head. So
Yeah, I think it's awesome that they're doing it, right? What other event are we going to see the top four medal contenders all race each other pre-Olympics? You know, dude, this would be
the men's, which one? NCAA 5K. The men's NCAA 5K. Well,
not the NCAA. I'm talking about the world. I know. There's this whole big world out there, Gordon, beyond the NCAA that I'm excited about. You make a good point. I think of Florida and sprints the same way I think of like the BU meets and distance. It's like you go there, you get your PB or you get your confidence booster, but then you got to test it somewhere else. And wherever you test it usually isn't as fast as BU or Claremont. But you're going to get better competition, and that's where the medals are won. And that's where the teams are made at that point. So this will be good. This will be a good. You're right. It'll be a good test. I'm excited for that one. And also, I was just wondering how many American athletes are actually going to run in diamond leagues before the Olympic trials. And now we know at least one. But you're right. Richardson is a great candidate for it because, you know, she ran so fast. She doesn't need to really prove anything in terms of like fitness or getting sharp, but just the big moments and racing against the big people would definitely help her out as she goes into the trials and then the Olympics if she qualifies. Bogie Jambu brings up men's 1500 in Monaco. Yeah, we'll probably see it there. But the thing is with the 1500, you never know who the top four people are. You know who the fastest PBs are, but you don't know ever who's going to be in top four at the world championships. But you could definitely see Inga Britson and Chariot in there. And then if you have those two, you at least know that you have the top two currently.
Can I do some unbreaking of news?
Sure.
So it's unbreaking. Good? I'm so you know how I've been floating the idea that Shelby will run the 10K?
Oh, you're walking this back?
No, I'm not walking it back. I'm telling you it's not happening. But I will tell you, there was plans for it to happen, but those plans have since changed, and now it's not happening.
What happened?
Which is unfortunate. Just change the plans. I don't have the reasoning. I just know that it was on the docket, but now it's off the docket. But
what's Bowerman
what I
gonna
do? What I do know is,
like, when are they gonna race?
Well, they'll probably run at Sound.
Okay, I didn't see them on the entry festival.
Or Portland Track Festival. I don't know. You know, Jerry, he'll just show up and be like, can I come in? They'll be like, yes. He doesn't have to follow the rules, right? You can just do whatever he wants. He can do his own track meet. It'd be like the Bowerman
he doesn't
Classic.
Get that $50 where late fee on, he didn't get that $50 late fee on the registration
no,
portal?
No, he doesn't.
No? But, waived?
Well, Shelby's not doing the 10K this year. The 10K is, though, in her future. That's all I can say about that. So
the thing is, nobody believeves you anymore. You lost all credibility on the Shelby.
No, I'm telling you, source. No, it is a common timeline to say you're going to do something and then not do it. That happens. Yeah. And that's what happened. And now, but I do know that eventually she's going to do it, and she's not just going to do it to, like, she's going to run fast. Like, she can potentially
well, but that's
go for
not
like an American
news.
Record.
Like, athlete moves up in distance isn't news. Athlete runs random other event as a safety in case they don't make it in their primary event. That's a little more newsworthy. I'm saying you were reporting that. That's why I'm disappointed, Gordon. You said it. You prefaced what? It with, hey, listen, everybody. Press
hey,
record.
I'm trying to correct the record right now. It's only May 3rd. The trials are end of June. Like, I'm getting out ahead of it. It's better than just sitting on it and not doing anything about it. So.
Just lost some credibility here. Okay, so you think Bowerman is going to run at – oh, you know what? I think they might run at Mount Sac, at least some of them, because they put out – so here you'll like this. This is some good Instagram sleuthing for you, Gordon, and I know you like Instagram sleuthing. On the podcast we recorded with Justin Knight, you know, he talked about how he's the best basketball-playing distance runner out there. And
yeah.
I said, what about Josh Thompson? Because he can dunk. And he's like, oh, yeah, you know, Josh and I were kind of going back and forth before the Texas meet about it, da-da-da-da-da. Well, Bowerman this past week, they put a video out, like, them talking during their long run. And they brought up, like, oh, Josh is going to challenge Justin Knight to a one-on-one game. Like, he tagged him on Instagram. And they said, they're like, after Mount Sac, let's do it. And then Mohamed's like, no, before Mount Sac, you guys should do it, which I thought was funny. The idea of like them in a parking lot before like an hour before a 1500 just going hard. So that made me think at least Josh Thompson is going to run the Mount Sac meet. Do all the other Bowerman people come? I have no idea. They could definitely split the squad. I just think that it's like you got this weekend. You got the Sound running meet. You got Portland Track Festival. It just feels like we should be seeing something soon. Doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, Bowerman is notorious for not running often, right? They love to kind of do like one race a year, right? I mean,
no, they do more than that.
They were willing to let Woody Kincaid jog a 5K instead of trying to get the standard. And even though you got
I'm looking
30,
at when Shelby, I want to see when Shelby debuted in 2019 because I think this is late even by their standards. The trials are in 6 weeks. I just think it's. So Shelby outdoors last year, a pre on June 30th, July. Oh, wow. Yeah, you're right. Oh, man, she never ran. Holy cow.
Yeah. They don't run.
So she did. She debuted with pre. I'm not counting indoors. June 3rd. Now, it was later that year, remember, because 2019. 3:59 at pre on June 30th. And then July 9th, Azusa Sunset Tour. She ran a 159.800. And then I think she rabbited the 5,000. And then it was literally USA's. So they ran two meets.
Yeah.
Trust in your training.
It's not good.
I like it.
Well, it's not good, though.
Cool.
I mean,
who's
yeah,
another?
It works,
maybe.
But, like, we need to set up a system where that shouldn't be, like, we should figure out a way to set up our sport where we're not what's the word? Incentivized to do that. Because basically Bowerman's incentivized to run less because it helps them be their best for the trials. And if it works, it works. And there's no shame in doing what works for you. But the problem is like they need to figure out a way to maybe make it so I don't know. Maybe we need to rethink the way we do trials. Maybe it shouldn't be all but just so one race. Maybe it should be multiple races. Maybe it should be like.
But here's what Thompson did though. Here's what Thompson did in 2019. He ran a 1500 at Oxy in the middle of May. Then the beginning of June, he ran a steeple, which was his last steeple, I think. Then the beginning of June or end of June, he ran in Eugene. Then he ran at Sunset Tour. Then he ran at Portland Track Festival. And then he ran at USA's. So he basically ran 5 meets before trials, which I think 5 is a solid number.
Yeah. But he's also more of a less experienced person. So someone like Shelby. He was chasing standards and stuff like that. And Shelby's just like, I just need to show up and win. So
yeah,
I get it. I do get it. But maybe we should figure out a way to make our regular season a little more fun.
It's just interesting because there's all these meets now, right? It was before, it was like there weren't many meets, and now there's all these meets, and you just expect everybody to show up because they're available and they look like they are appealing, right? They're geographically convenient and they have good fields. I'm looking at Thompson in 2018. Well, that's different because there's a champ. There's no global championship. But yeah, I guess it's just different for different people, right? Like I remember last year when we were looking at, remember Nike did the thing where they made him run because they needed the 10 race minimum. And we went through and it was funny how like eerily close Centro always was to 10 races. And I didn't think it was a thing until I actually went through and I was like, oh, he raced 9 times this year and like 10 times this year and like 12 times that year. There was no, it didn't seem to deviate much. We got one question before we go on one of your favorite runners. So I'm going to leave this one to you. It's from Max. It says, thoughts on Zuhair Talbi, NAIA runner from Oklahoma City University, running 13:28 and taking down a pro field at Trials of Miles.
First of all, it's not my favorite runner. That is Lincoln Strike's favorite runner. But
you know about Zuhair though.
It's like, I know. I keep on thinking about what if he would have gotten that academic eligible for Florida State and he could have been on the Florida State team and he would have kind of also been in the mix with my love for the 5K, right? It would have been wild. But here's the thing. I'm not going to lie. Breaking 13:30 doesn't mean much anymore, right? It's just like, it's like the 4-minute mile. It's like, all right, cool. You can do what everyone else can do. Like run sub 3:55 now, right? And I think that's in the 5K, it used to be like, whoa, sub 13:30 is like super elite for a college kid. And now I think like in order to be the best of the best, you need to now be sub 13:20. I think it's just everything got shifted 10 seconds. Now, some people will say it's because of a certain type of shoe company putting things on people's feet that change it up. I think it's weird. It's weird how 13:28 just don't mean anything anymore. I mean, I remember freaking out in like 2014 or 15 at Peyton Jordan when like Ben True and Hassan Mead ran like 13:00. And I was like, God, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. And now it's like, all right, all the best can run 13:00. And if you want to be the best, you need to run 12:50s. And we've been seeing that kind of trend over the past year or so. So, 13:28 to me is now just like a data point on an Excel chart. It's not really anything that opens my eye. That's just my
opinion. I mean, we literally, Well, and then you have like the very top pushing it even faster, right? So, like on the women's side last year, we saw a world record in the women's 5, and then you saw Houlihan and Schweizer run those 1-2 American times, right? Put it into the 14:20s. And then the men's side, you saw Joshua Cheptegei. So not only is like, 13:15, 13:25 becoming more and more common, but the fastest time, which we always tend, I think, just as track fans to kind of orient ourselves around, is like, oh, you hear, like when you know Shelby runs 14:20, whatever, all of a sudden, like, 15:05 just doesn't seem as fast as it did before, just because we think we orient ourselves around the fastest time. And it happens, and events go in waves and stuff. So it's not always just like Well, Kenenisa Bekele ran that fast, but that was like, you can always kind of chalk that up to history. It's kind of like what you're seeing that happens around you more recently that makes you kind of question it. But Toppy's been running well, man. He won that 10K out here, and he does this stuff with a lot of like a lot of solo efforts. Like, he was hitting his watch in this one too. It was impressive. Yeah, Gordon was all on the Talby to Florida State train like 2 years ago when he thought it was going to happen. He had all of his projections, all the scoring charts were out there. That's why.
Oh yeah. Speaking of projections, I need to update NCAA and USA rankings, which I won't do this week. Basically, I'm not going to update anything until Monday of next week, likely. And also update that who has the standard, who doesn't. That probably won't all get updated to next week. So 2 week break with my stats because I'm in a desert. So.
All right. Well, we'll let you go back to the desert. FlowTrackPodcast@gmail.com is the email address. Subscribe to the show on YouTube, the FlowTrack Podcast YouTube channel, or the FlowTrack YouTube channel, or heck, just do both of them. You can find the show wherever you listen to audio podcasts as well, or on the site, flowtrack.org. Gordon, you're off on Wednesday, I believe, but we'll figure some stuff out and we'll be back two more times this week.
Go Sixers.
Later, guys. Stop. Stop. I'm a Bucks fan. Lifelong Bucks fan.